Wednesday edition of Daft on Draft, and we are doing Daft or Draft today. It is one of our favorite episodes. We get to throw the takes out there. We get to answer them. We get to get a little bit hot here. And today we have a couple of very good ones, three of them. We always try to do one that is college football focused. We're doing one that is positionally focused, and we are doing one that is player focused. We are excited about it, but I can't do it alone. I have with me Corey Kinnon, my co-host. Corey, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I'm looking forward to some time off of work around the holidays. So not that it's any less stressful with two kids, but I'll be at the in-laws, so we have two extra hands as well. So maybe it will be a little less stressful. And the aunts of my wife's sisters will be there too. So a lot of extra hands. So I might have a lot of downtime, actually. So very excited for that. And secretly, my wife is off on Friday and I have to work. And I'm actually kind of excited about that too, because it's like I think they're going to take my kids to the Children's Museum in Indianapolis, which is really awesome. And I might have the whole house to myself on Friday. So secretly looking forward to that as well.
That will not be bad. My my wife and son are coming home about 2 weeks earlier than they were originally slated, going to pick them up tomorrow, which is Wednesday, which is the day that this podcast is coming out. I have not been more excited, I think, about anything in my entire life. It's been over 5 weeks since I've seen them, and I never thought that it would ever be as difficult as it has been. I'm excited for that, but I'm excited to get into this episode. Let's get to it. Let's get it over with. Let's go. What is the first Daft or Draft, Corey?
Yeah, so we came into the season really high on a lot of edge rushers. We got about 4 or 5 weeks into the season. We said, none of these edge rushers are doing anything. This edge rush class isn't living up to the hype. It's actually, they're all playing pretty poorly. And now, Dalton, the Daft or Draft is, this edge class has secretly become the strength of the 2025 draft class.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Well, all right, let me caveat this, because I think when you look at it from the standpoint of relative to what this position looks like normally, I think running back has the strongest case. Mm-hmm. Running back is just ridiculously talented from top to bottom this year. But what I will say is this is an interesting edge class from top to bottom, because you do have a lot of the top end talent. You have guys like James Pierce, who are like the Brian Byrne type. You have Micah Parsons 2.0 and Abdul Carter. You have Shamar Stewart, who is a one-of-one type of athlete. Scorton, who all-team bad body, all-team good player. You have Uman Milan, who has, you know, kind of, we think, kind of finally figured it out after a couple of years. But then you have like 8,000 DPR-type guys who you could throw darts at on day three. You have more 270 to 280 pound bendy edge rushers than I think I can ever remember in my entire life. Guys like Landon Jackson and LT Overton, and even guys like Ashton Gillette, who is like 270 pounds and can bend a little bit. Like, there are guys up and down the order that you can find scheme fits for. You can find guys who are going to be five techs. Davin Van is going to be like a 4i five tech guy. So like kind of an edge, kind of an interior guy. Shamar Turner, kind of an edge, kind of an interior guy at 290 pounds. You have guys like TJ Sanders from South Carolina, who's 280 pounds, could probably play five tech or 4i. You have Tonka Hemingway on that same defensive line that could do the same thing. And then you have, you know, your mid, you know, round guys, not even mid, but like day two guys in Kyle Kennard. And like, there's so many names in this class that are intriguing, that you get the right fit with, you get opposite the right guys, could be really devastating players from rounds one through rounds four or five.
Yeah, I'm going to draft this as well. And I think for me, it comes back around to all of the guys that I liked during summer scouting did kick it back. Abdul Carter, James Pierce, both had extremely slow starts to the season. Nick Scorton a little bit has kicked it back up as well. But again, I think we both are under the impression that Scorton's probably going back to school rather than declaring. But what has kicked it to that next level are the guys like Shamar Stewart, who a one-of-one body type, probably a one-of-one athlete at that body type, even if he doesn't have it all figured out. It is the Princely Umanmielen's who has kind of figured it out finally. The Landon Jacksons, I think Umanmielen and Landon Jackson are kind of in that same tier of like, these guys can wreak havoc off the edge, even if you need to ease them in, like back in the first round, early second round type guys. Those Ohio State guys haven't really moved the needle for me. They didn't move the needle for me over the summer either, though. So that's not really impacting my class a lot.
No, you're right. But what I will say about them is I could see both of them having like Sam Hubbard type careers in the NFL, where they're probably, and Sam, I think, ended up having a double-digit sack season 2 years ago. But like they'll probably never have double-digit sack seasons, either of them. But I think they could be good complementary guys on the opposite side, can be good against the run, can push the pocket in a little bit, but won't ever be a devastating pass rusher. Like, I think that's what I think of when I think of those Ohio State guys.
Yeah, I could get on board with that. I can get on board with that for sure. Like an Isaiah McGuire type. Like, if you remember, he plays for the Cleveland, drafted by the Cleveland Browns.
Yep.
But then, like, yeah, the emergence of Kyle Kinnard out of nowhere. Georgia Tech transfer, like, adds to the mix as well. Jalen Walker, who's probably going to be graded by as a linebacker for the majority of teams. But, I mean, let's not pretend he's not going to be used like Frankie Louvu or like Micah Parsons Light or something like that. He's going to come off the edge, too, and do what he does. So there has been an emergence of guys that we didn't talk about over the summer. And now we're like, these guys are in the top 50 players.
In my mock draft, I sent Jalen Walker to Tennessee because they have two guys who I think could – they. In like Kenneth Murray and I forget who else is there right now.
But Landry, Harold Landry.
Well, that's on the edge, but I'm talking about legitimate off-ball linebackers. So they have two off-ball linebackers who are veterans right now that he could kind of ease his way into that while having that edge role as well. Mostly because Tennessee could use that type of edge rusher on the opposite side, but mostly because they might just not know what they have in him and they don't want to stick him in one place. They don't want to do what Arizona did with Hassan Reddick for so many years and play him out of position at linebacker when ultimately he ends up being an edge rusher. I think using him the way that the Dallas Cowboys used Micah Parsons in year one is the ideal fit for him, but you have to find the defense that is going to be able to play him off ball and as a Sam or, you know, traditional edge rusher with his hand in the dirt.
Yeah. Yeah. All that to say, yes, this edge class is stacked. And again, I think a full portfolio, full report on a lot of these guys I'll have questions with, but there's no doubt in my mind that I'll have questions with a lot of these guys in this draft class. So, but front to back, there are roles for these guys though. And role players get drafted on day two minimum. To have a role, mid-round minimum, like fourth round, third round, second round, those guys are find a role player. You can find a lot of role players in this draft class. So I really do like the edge group that we have here.
Me too. What other positions do you think are strong in this class? I mean, running back for sure. Wide receiver is always going to have a million names. Mm-hmm. Is there anywhere else?
Tight end, man. I love the tight end class. Tyler Warren, Colson Loveland, obviously at the top. You could talk a lot about Harold Fannin. Fannin's another guy. I think I would still be surprised if he came out, just because, again, it's rare to see an underclassman tight end unless they are a Loveland type athlete, type player, a Bowers type player, like have had that reputation for multiple years. I still think he's probably a strong candidate to transfer. But if he doesn't, we're talking about. And I think whether he declares or not, I think he deserves to win the Mackey. What he's doing at Bowling Green is absolutely nuts. Mm-hmm. Absolutely nuts. So I think he deserves to win the Mackey. But yeah, you add Fan into that, Helm into that. I love Gunnar Helm again, well-rounded.
I love Helm.
He's got a lot of blue chip traits. Like his blocking for a tight end, I would say is blue chip. His fluidity, I would say, is blue chip, but like he doesn't have that blue chip athleticism, which is like really holding me up. Like that explosiveness doesn't have the blue chip explosiveness, which is like hold me up a little bit. But I love him, and he'll produce, man. Mm-hmm. Like if whoever takes Gunnar Helm, that guy is gonna hit. Like that's what there's one player every year. Though I'm like whoever drafts that guy is gonna get a player. He might not be the best player on the team or in the league, but he's going to hit. You will not miss. Jaxon Smith-Njigba is one of those guys. Ladd McConkey was one of those, was that guy for me last year. Like, whoever takes Ladd McConkey, you're going to hit on that pick. That's just the kind of player he is. Gunnar Helm is one of those guys for me this year. Like, that, you're not going to miss.
That's exactly, well, it's kind of what I wrote about him in my 7-round mock draft that's coming out for PFN on Thanksgiving Day. But that's exactly how I feel about Tyleek Williams. He is, he's not the best player on that defense, even though he is very, very good. He has never really flashed as much as you would like him to as a pass rusher, although he definitely has those pass rushing traits. He's just always in the absolute correct place where he needs to be on every single play.
And you can't move him off the ball.
No, he's just a damn good football player at the end of the day. And that's not, that's going to play. And that's exactly how I feel about Gunnar Helm as well. He does everything well, everything. His hands are amazing as well. And I wanted to talk about Williams a little bit because I also do think that this defensive tackle class is pretty impressive relative to regular defensive tackle classes. Because I do think that that's one that is normally pretty low end. You don't see a bunch of guys with the type of upside that this class produces. Like, I'm not a huge Walter Nolan fan, just because I think the consistency is outrageously poor with him.
Yeah.
And he just completely disappears, and it's not an effort thing. He plays with his pants on fire every single down. His issue is completely mental. And at a position where you have to have an immediate reactionary ability when it comes to processing the information in front of you, if you are a little bit slow, you're going to get blown off the ball no matter how talented you are. I've seen it for 2 years or a year and a half with Mozzie Smith in Dallas. If you're slow off the ball, you're going to get beat up no matter how talented you are. And you see that a lot with him, where he's just not confident in the picture that's in front of him, and he is getting absolutely washed out in the run game, even though he is a superior athlete to almost every single person on the field. His upside is ridiculous, though, and it wouldn't surprise me if he ended up going in the top 20.
Mm-mm. It wouldn't. Teams are going to take shots on upside in this draft class. That's just the way it is.
You have to.
There aren't 15 first-round players in this draft class. So, like, we're going to – by the time you hit pick 20, teams are going to be just taking the player they think is best on their board, and it's going to look different for 32 different teams. Yep. So it's going to be a wacky draft. The defensive tackle class, I'm pretty indifferent to. I think I'm on the same page as you are with Walter Nolan, but like, I think names like Deion Walker kind of turned me off to that defensive tackle class of like a guy like, this guy's a freak to do this at 6'7". And it's like,
well, I think
every time I watch him, I was like, this guy,
I think we've turned, I think we've, I think we've turned the corner on him. I think he's about where he needs to be for most people at this point. I think we've kind of figured out that he's weird, man.
But because, I think Derek Harmon kind of fits in that same category. It's like people are really loving him because of the production, but like he's playing next to a really awesome nose tackle who's just doing a lot of damage for him and giving him clean passes at the quarterback. And like part of me wonders how much of his skill set's going to play at the NFL level. So, like, there are names that are getting hyped up in this defensive tackle class. And I'm just like, I don't know how that's going to play.
Yeah.
If you were drafting this player high and need them to play the way you want them to play.
Walker is just a, like, a slashing three technique in a one technique's body.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's in a one technique's body and he wants to play, like, a three technique, that he just, like, takes complete series off sometimes because he's gassed.
Yeah.
Which
I will say it's a fun one tech class. It's a fun one tech class. Yeah, I love me a good one tech, man.
Yeah, me too.
Corleone, man, is awesome. Oh my goodness.
I love, and that's the thing. It's like Mason Graham could be a, you know, technically a one technique. Corleone is awesome. I love Jamari Caldwell at Oregon as well. It is a
CJ West at Indiana. Yeah. Dudes all over the place.
Yep. Fun class. But anyways. Let's get to the player one here. Let's do it. Malachi Starks. Teams should consider drafting him as a cornerback in this draft class.
I'm going to daft this. and I'm going to adapt it because drafting him as a safety doesn't mean you can't still throw him down as an apex defender or in the nickel or in the slot. Like, I think we did this with Minkah Fitzpatrick in 2018? We did this with Minkah Fitzpatrick as well. Like, is he a corner? Is he a safety? He plays football. So like, although like, that's to say, I do think he could play it in a pinch. Like, if you're really beat up at corner, I think you could play it. Not even at a pinch. Like, I think he could play it comfortably. Like, I just watched the Georgia defense against Tennessee, and that team, again, they'll push you vertically. I mean, he was carrying guys across the field in off man. I thought his hips were super fluid. He was triggering down, flipping his hips, even on like comeback routes, to completely flip his leverage and make a play on the football. Which I did think when I watched the Texas game that Texas kind of ate him up when he was sitting in off man a little bit. Like, he couldn't get open path. He couldn't hinge it fast enough, and he was kind of getting left in the dust a little bit in that game. But in the Tennessee game, man, he looked like a completely different animal in man coverage. And I think he's gonna do nutty stuff in Indianapolis. He's gonna test off the charge, and I think it starts with that hip fluidity. And I think that's what sells me that like he could, but I'm gonna adapt it because I think that you're taking away too many other things that he can do for you. If you're saying I want this guy to play corner, again, I think corner is an extremely valuable position.
Yeah, exactly. When we look at the value and I know his skill set, like, when I look at him, when I look at the body type, when I look at the way that he moves, when I look at the way that he's able to fit the run, I see a little bit of Jalen Ramsey in him. And yeah, Ramsey is another guy. He played corner, but people talked about him being a safety because of the body type, because of the movement, because of the way that he hits people. And so I kind of look at Starks as the opposite version of Jalen Ramsey. Mm-hmm. Now, what I will say and why I'm going to draft this as well is because he plays safety, and going from playing safety and being able to more often use your eyes from different leverages and be able to have a different assignment, because even though he plays corner a lot, he plays in the slot a lot. Mm-hmm. Playing in the slot, playing as an apex defender is completely and entirely different from playing as a boundary corner. Jahdae Barron at Texas is doing it right now, and he's doing it at a very high level as an outside corner at Texas. But he is also playing in a defense that runs almost exclusively cover three. So he's still playing with mostly zone eyes, which is something that he is very used to from being a slot defender slash safety in the past. And so when I look at somebody like Malachi Starks, I see the vision. I see if you are a team that desperately needs a corner, and Will Johnson and Travis Hunter are gone, and you're staring at a small school kid coming off an ACL injury, or Benjamin Morrison coming off of a hip injury, mm-hmm, do you pull the trigger? And I think that there are teams out there that would pull the trigger on that. I wouldn't want to do that because I love safety play and I love what Malachi Starks is able to do at safety. But if I'm a team that needs a corner and I'm in the top 15, I'm strongly considering, I'm changing my answer. Okay. I'm going to draft this. If I'm a team in the top 15, because what do we always talk about when we talk about Malachi Starks, when we are doing mock drafts,
it's hard to find a fit for him.
Drop the hard F there. We can't freaking find a spot for him because he's a safety. But if we look at him as a corner, he probably goes top 15. And we don't even really have to think about it because teams always need corners.
Yep.
And teams aren't willing to spend that type of draft capital on safety.
It makes sense to me. That logic makes sense to me. The ultimate question is, he's going to get asked it in meetings. He's going to get asked it pre-draft. The ultimate answer is like, what does he say? What's his answer to that question as well?
Oh,
I don't want to play safety. I don't want to play.
But no, corners I'm get sure paid. He'll say yes. Yeah, of course. See the paid. Paycheck differences between corner and safety.
That's fair. Yeah, it's kind of what the Bengals are trying to do with Dax Hill. Although I think they're just trying to do anything to salvage what their investment in Dax Hill, and they can't really, nothing's really working out there. But
yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I know. I loved him at Michigan too. I thought he was really explosive, really awesome trigger. Yeah,
me too. All right, the third draft or draft that we have for you guys is that at number 16 right now. If the South Carolina Gamecocks beat Clemson, they will make the college football playoff. Draft it or draft it, Corey?
I'm going to draft it, even though there are two SEC teams ahead of them that would, like ranking-wise, are ranked ahead of them. But neither of them are playing ranked opponents this week. South Carolina is. Like, Alabama's playing Auburn. Okay. Auburn beat Texas A&M. Auburn could go out there and beat Alabama. Alabama's not playing good football.
No.
Ole Miss is playing Mississippi State. Mississippi State got blown out by Toledo this season. Like, those games shouldn't move the needle rankings-wise. Beating the 12th team in the nation, Clemson, should. And the way that we're going to look at this as well is I don't think both Miami and SMU make the college football playoffs. So whoever wins that ACC championship game is in, and whoever loses it is out. I think Indiana's in basically because of the SEC imploding last weekend. Boise State's going to be, as long as Boise State wins out, they're going to be in. Arizona State's going to get in if they win the Big 12. So that's that, like that, that takes away from either SMU or Miami. It's going to be tight. It's going to be tight, but I'm going to draft it. I'm going to draft that South Carolina gets the 12 seed if they beat Clemson.
I'm going to draft it, even though I personally would draft this. I believe
you think that there's going to be some Bama bias involved.
I look at the rankings now. Why would the AP put them? And we got to look at the college football playoff rankings because we haven't seen them yet. But I do think they are hedging their bets here by putting Alabama and Ole Miss ahead of South Carolina. So they can say, well, we can't have them jump Alabama and Ole Miss if they win. Because it would be so easy for them to rank them at 13 and bump everyone else down. And then if they beat Clemson, just say, okay, like, we knew the whole time that they deserved to be in. But the way that I personally look at it is that is a team that should have two losses because they didn't lose that LSU game. The refs lost them that LSU game.
Yes.
They beat LSU. They were the better football team. They deserve to win that football game. And it's a travesty that they have a loss in the column because of that game. But at the end of the day, yes, there will always be Bama bias.
Yeah. Always. And they also lost both head-to-head to Ole Miss and Alabama, now that I'm looking
at it as well. Which stinks because I think that they're playing much better football right now.
They lost Alabama by two as well. Two.
Yes.
But, I mean, transitive property, head-to-head, blah, 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 blah. They smoked Oklahoma, and Oklahoma smoked Alabama. You know, like, we can
talk about that. And I don't want to see that Mickey Mouse Ole Miss offense in the college football playoffs.
No, absolutely not. That, no. If Ole Miss makes the playoffs, I will vomit.
I can't explain the Jackson Dart thing anymore. I can't do it. I don't want to do it. Like, and if that Mickey Mouse offense works for a college football playoff game, God forbid they score like 24 points and beat Penn State by a touchdown, I'm going to lose my mind because we're going to have to hear about Jackson Dart performing in the clutch. And I just can't do it. Just can't do it. I think that South Carolina deserves to be there, but I'm going to adapt it because I don't think that the playoff committee will give them their flowers.
I don't think so either. I think that at the end of the day, they're going to fall back to Bama. It's just a good fallback. They've been the cream of the crop for a decade plus, two decades. Mm-hmm. Like, just fall back on Bama. And I think that's probably what we'll see too, unfortunately. Because, man, I'll tell you what, I think Lenora Sellers has gotten better every single week, man.
What games did he miss?
The LSU game, so he missed the Akron game. He missed the Ole Miss game.
Okay.
He missed the Ole Miss game. He was back for the Bama game, but he missed the
Ole Miss
game.
That's what we missed.
Mm-hmm. And they might have been able to beat Ole Miss if he plays in that football game. So,
yeah.
But he's getting better every week. And like we talked about Anthony Richardson being a one of one guy, this guy might be Dollar General Anthony Richardson.
He's not quite as big, but.
No, but he's a big dude and he's got a massive arm, really athletic. So he's one of those guys. And I don't need to get deep into this because it's not on the topic of the podcast, but like when I do summer scouting, there's no point in me scouting, charting the entire season of quarterbacks. Like if I'm talking about projecting the next season, I don't want to watch week one of their like first career starts. I do the last six games of guys before summer because that's going to give me the most recent sample size, the freshest example of who these guys are. I mean, and right now he's 5-1 in those last six games with the loss, the 2-point loss to Bama, putting up pretty good numbers in each of those games. So, I mean, if he beats Clemson, we're looking at 6-0 playing good football against 1, 2, 3 ranked opponents. And like, that's going to be a pretty good body of work for me to chart on Lenore Sellers. So like I am tempering my expectations, but I'm optimistic about the quarterback that he's becoming and could be for next year's draft class.
Will he be a redshirt sophomore next year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he might not. He's 19 years old. Yeah.
I struggle with that because I just don't think, like, we live in an age now where I just don't see, unless you are like a Trevor Lawrence type, I don't see guys declaring that early these days.
I wouldn't if he were a first year starter as a redshirt sophomore, but he'll be a second year starter. So he'll have two whole seasons of college football under his belt by the end of the season. And that's the difference between like Anthony Richardson or Mitch Trubisky or, you know, like Garrett Nussmeier. Nussmeier were to declare this year as a redshirt junior. Like,
yeah.
I think where we see a lot of misses is like,
I would still love 3 years. I would still love 3 years of starting experience.
I would too. But if like this back six goes really stellar and he's really stellar next year, that's a pretty good sample size for me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That is Dafter Draft on the Daft on Draft podcast. That's all we got for you guys today. In and out within 30 minutes. We hope that your drive to your family on Thanksgiving is safe. Or if you're flying, that is also safe. We hope that you guys get to your destinations. We hope that you guys have fun with family. We hope that you guys have a lot to be thankful for on this Thanksgiving. And we have a lot to be thankful for in this NFL draft class, and we will talk about that for the Thanksgiving Day episode. It'll be a quick one. We'll get you guys in and out, but we have guys that we need to talk about, so we will. As always, I'm Dalton Miller. He is the fake Corey Kinnon on Twitter. I love you guys. Goodbye.